From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hi, everyone, and thanks for listening to Korean Context. We are reaching the end of summer, which means that we have just one more rebroadcast episode for you before we start our fall season with all new episodes. This week's episode was one of our really popular ones from last year, and I thought it was a really good time to bring it up again, considering that North Korea is in the news even more than usual for the last few weeks. This is an interview with Jean Lee. She was formerly with the Associated Press and covered North Korea, both from Seoul and from Pyongyang. And she has a lot of really interesting things to say about the way that we write about North Korea, the words that we're using to describe North Korea, and how that can shape people's views of the country, and also how people feel that we should respond to some of the issues related to North Korea. So I hope you enjoy this interview, and we'll see you next week and start our new episodes. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. We here at KEI often write and talk about North Korea, and we try to do it not just from a security standpoint, but also talking about some of the changes in North Korean society and the economy, and how things like sanctions could affect the future of North Korea. But those of us who write about North Korea rarely take the time to step back and think about the words we use to describe the DPRK and how our writing about this regime could impact the way the public sees and responds to North Korea. So with this in mind, today's guest, Jean Lee, organized a really fascinating discussion which will be held at the Wilson Center on December 7th, 2016. This event is called Beyond Caricatures, Writing About North Korea, and features a fantastic group of journalists, novelists, and historians who tackle this dilemma of how to write about the DPRK from different angles. For those of you who are not listening to the podcast in real time, you may have missed this event, but there will be plenty of other cool things coming from Jean in the future. So I'm really excited to sit down and talk with her about her experiences as a journalist covering North Korea, both from Seoul and from Pyongyang, and how she sees the caricatures that often emerge when people talk about the DPRK. So Jean, thank you again for taking your time to sit down and talk with me.
Thanks for having me.
So can you begin and get us started by introducing yourself and your background covering the DPRK?
My name is Jean Lee, and I am a journalist. I worked for many years for the Associated Press across the United States and covering Europe and Africa. And in 2008, I was posted to Seoul as AP's Seoul Bureau Chief, but I was given the mission of helping to open an office in North Korea. So I did start making trips to North Korea in 2008 as a journalist, and in 2011 was granted permission to work more regularly in North Korea, so I became the first American journalist to be granted access on the ground in North Korea as part of the local foreign press corps, and in January 2012 opened the AP Pyongyang Bureau and worked there for a couple years. And then went on sabbatical to try to really process what it is I saw and reported on, and I'm now serving as a global fellow at the Wilson Center.
One thing that is really interesting to me as someone who has followed news about North Korea closely for many years, I've noticed a tendency, especially in Western media outlets, to publish basically two types of stories about North Korea. One of them being, you know, quote, tensions are high after our nuclear or missile test. And then the other one would be, look at this crazy thing that Kim Jong-un did. So focusing in particular on the latter, what is it about North Korea that makes these kinds of kooky, crazy stories so popular?
Well, that is business, to be honest, the business of journalism. And in this day and age in which clicks matter and clicks mean money, the crazier and kookier the story, the more clicks you're going to get. That said, yeah, those crazy, kooky North Koreans, I think that that's the impression we in the United States have of the North Koreans. However, I would argue that they are not crazy and kooky, and that there is a method to their madness, at least in their own minds. There is a reason for why they portray themselves a certain way. And I think there's also an explanation for why it is we interpret that propaganda that way. So those are two things that, A, there is a certain kind of propaganda that the North Koreans project, and then there's a certain kind of prejudice and their preconceived notions on our part that lead us to interpret that propaganda in a certain way. And it ends up being a crazy, kooky North Korean.
So that's really interesting. I definitely want to dig into both of those aspects. So on the one hand, you have the type of propaganda that North Korea is putting out. Can you talk a little bit more about that, about some of the things that they want us to think about them, and what are they trying to portray both internally and externally to us with their propaganda?
So we as Americans have so little access to North Korea, both in terms of getting on the ground, whether it's as journalists or as tourists, and also in terms of the flow of information. There's very little information coming out of the country. The information that they do provide is carefully packaged. Now, in North Korea, their idea of news is actually propaganda. So all of their state media, the Workers' Party newspaper, Nodong Shinmun, KCNA, which is the state news agency, they are all tasked with promoting their party or their military or their government's policies and agenda. It's pure propaganda. And so for us, it tends to look extremely stilted because we're not accustomed to pure propaganda. Our media tries to represent life as it is. Their media presents a very particular packaged image. And so we have to try to take into consideration what their objectives are in terms of their media and also account for the fact that we have such limited access. So what we see is a very narrow slice of information, a very controlled one. And I think that that shapes a lot of what it is we see of North Korea.
That makes a lot of sense to me. They obviously have objectives with everything that they're trying to put out. But what is it about us as Americans that can't see past that, I guess? And as you were talking about our prejudices, so what is it about our prejudices that can't really see past the fact that this is, they have a purpose to what they're doing, rather than just seeing it as a craziness?
So part of the blame lies with the North Koreans because they restrict our access to North Korea and to broader sources of information on Korea. We just have a very one-sided image. And in their minds, it's very interesting. North Koreans, as far as they're concerned, they're used to this idea that you present the best image possible. So for example, they tend to bring in the foreign media only when they have these big events. So it's like a big anniversary. And what they restrict the cameras to are these big parades, like the military parades with the goose-stepping soldiers, and the mass games where you've got 100, 150,000 performers moving in complete synchronization. And the image that that conveys is that they're just these robots. And to us, you know, we interpret that and we say they're totally robotic. They are completely brainwashed. When I bring this up with the North Koreans, and to them, what they're trying to project is a sense of unity. So we are all of the same mind. We behave the same way. And that to them is a show of strength. So it's a very different idea between this Korean sense of conformism and unity versus a very Western sense of individuality. So for them, they don't understand when I will sometimes tell the North Koreans, you got to let us see you before and after these big parades when you're just acting like normal people. And their response will be, why would you want to see a normal person, not the big show? And so there's a very different idea of what is presentable, what image they want to present. And I do try to tell them that by just letting us see parades and mass games, that they are creating and enforcing this image that they're all very robotic. But for them, that those parades and those mass games do signal a show of strength that has a domestic purpose as well. They want to show their own people that they are totally united, and that's one way to convey that throughout. And that's true in any country when you have big parades like that. That's true in America as well. It's part of the ceremony and part of the paying homage to tradition. And so every country has those rituals. It's just that's all we get to see from North Korea. So it really shapes our image of the North Koreans. also, I think that in terms of our perception and prejudice, we in the media tend to portray the North Koreans as kooky and crazy because we're coming at it from a very Western perspective. But to be honest, because I am an ethnic Korean, I grew up with Korean culture, I spent a lot of time in South Korea, I tend to see some of these rituals a little bit differently and through a Korean filter. Some of the difference that we see is actually Korean rather than kooky North Korean. So to give you an example, some of the funeral rites after Kim Jong-il died, you would see people throwing themselves on the ground, wailing, and that got a lot of press attention, and that reinforced, it was kind of, again, those kooky, crazy North Koreans who were just throwing themselves on the ground. But to be honest, it reminded me of some of the traditional Korean funeral rites, and it's not uncommon at a Korean funeral to see the survivors throwing themselves in a really dramatic, theatrical, exaggerated way. It was part of the mourning ritual and sending the body off to their next life in the afterworld, and making sure that the gods above knew that they would be missed. And so that does have its root in Korean tradition. So when you look at it through that Korean lens, it doesn't seem so kooky. And so part of it is just that we in the rest of the world have a lack of understanding of Korean culture. I think also we have to recognize that North Korea is still an enemy of the United States. And throughout our history, we have had enemies that are sort of sanctioned villains. So for me growing up, I grew up during the Cold War and it was the Soviet Union. So I grew up with, when we would play games, it would always be the Soviets against the Americans. And you definitely didn't want to have to play the part of the Soviet. And then after that, I would say it was, you know, for a period of time, it was the Chinese. Until fairly recently, until the U.S. started developing a better trade relationship with China, China was sort of the sanctioned villain. And now it's the North Koreans. So in a way, because of our own political policy, we have sanctioned the villainizing of North Korea. So it's okay to make fun of North Korea, similar to the way that it was okay to make fun of Saddam Hussein or some of our other enemies. Now, one interesting thing that happened while I was in North Korea was this movie Red Dawn came out. And I actually have not watched it, but my colleague grew up with that movie, and they did a remake of it. So when we were children, the enemy were the Chinese. And apparently what happened was when they did the remake of it, the modern remake, they at the very last minute, they had to sub out all the Chinese characters and turn them into North Koreans. And so this is, I thought, was really interesting that this has shifted, that we're no longer, for commercial reasons, allowed to really characterize the Chinese as villains, but we can with the North Koreans. And I think that contributes a little bit to, when I talk about the prejudice, that contributes to the villainizing of North Koreans.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that as you were talking about Red Dawn and then also Olympus Has Fallen. And there were several other movies that had the North Koreans as villains that have come out in the last few years. So I definitely understand what you mean.
And I do think we have to think about how that affects our perception of the North Koreans. And whether that encourages us and sanctions us to treat them like caricatures or cartoons. And like I said, I think that part of that really is the fault of the North Koreans, who give us so little opportunity to get to know who they are and to really paint them in an accurate way. So that's their own propaganda and their own restrictions on the free flow of information. And then the other part of that is our own preconceived notions and our own prejudices. And it can have some serious ramifications and consequences. Look at The Interview. When the movie The Interview came out, when I heard about it, I just thought, so for almost any other country, you would make up the name of a country because you wouldn't want to deliberately offend them. And why could you not have just made up a country that we all know is North Korea but doesn't go by that name, a leader who we all know is meant to be Kim Jong-un but doesn't go by that name? And I think it shows that they, in a sense, the makers of the movie just did not take North Korea seriously. It's almost like North Korea is a figment of their imagination, and they didn't take into account that North Korea might take offense at that and might respond, which we now know they did.
Right. So this is really interesting to me. I think, you know, like I said, I've been following this from a more policy or a more, you know, academic perspective. And then I talk to friends or family, and they're interested in Korea because I'm interested in Korea. And so my mom will send me these doomsday news articles, or she'll, you know, want to see movies or things like that. And it's just, it's really hard to bridge that gap. So I guess my question is, coming at it from a perspective of having written about North Korea for quite some time, what can be done, or do you have any suggestions to switch it a little bit and, you know, still have interesting stories that people want to read, but have them be a little bit maybe more responsible about how they report on North Korea?
I do try to make a point in being very judicious with the stories that I promote and tweet, for example. The most popular stories, to be honest, are those kooky North Korean, crazy North Korean stories. But I try to be very careful in promoting those because I think it's dangerous and not helpful, because I do think it's incredibly important for us to try to understand who they are. I think that sometimes we mistake trying to understand or portray them accurately with being apologist or sanctioning what they do or who they are, but that's not at all the case. And I approach this as a journalist. My attitude is that in order to deal with them, which we have to do because they are threatening the region with nuclear weapons, so if we can't let North Korea do its own thing. I mean, it would be great if we could let them do their own thing, if they were just sitting peacefully doing their own thing, but that's not the case. I think it's absolutely important for us to try to understand who they are, how they think, what they want, so that we can deal with them. And that means any number of things. So whether it's dealing with them on a humanitarian basis, on a diplomatic basis, if you're trying to figure out how to negotiate with them, how to even get them to talk about denuclearization, you've got to understand who they are, how they think, and find a language to talk to them with. We're not going to get that unless we understand who they are and really understand who they are in an accurate way. So in that sense, the comic relief doesn't help. I mean, it's entertaining, but it doesn't help us understand how we're going to talk to them or to deal with them, whether it means engaging them or punishing them. I mean, even if you want to punish them with sanctions, you've got to understand how you're going to drop sanctions that are going to really bite. My mission as a journalist was to get on the ground and further my own understanding. And then what I do now in my own writing is try to use what I learned on the ground to shape and color the portraits that I paint, but also outside of North Korea to try to further understanding, to really encourage people to try to understand who they are. That could mean learning how to read their propaganda better and to find the nuggets of information that will help us understand how they're changing or what direction they're going in. So reading the propaganda for those on the outside. And for those who get into the country, really encourage them to share what it is they see on the ground. So that could be aid workers or diplomats who have access, or reporters who do get on the ground. So it is absolutely crucial for us to get a clearer picture of who they are in order to deal with them. And that does not, there's so much criticism of the fact that I went into North Korea, but that is what we do as journalists, is try to get on the ground and try to contribute to the picture with what we see inside North Korea, not just to cover it from the outside. Because, as you know, looking at any place from the outside can be a very stilted picture.
So I do want to talk a little bit about why you're here in D.C. for this awesome event coming up at the Wilson Center. Can you give us a little bit of a brief preview? What are some of the things that you are going to be talking about, some of the great guests that you guys have invited? Can you talk a little bit about your event?
I've had some incredible conversations with Anna Fifield, who is the Washington Post bureau chief who covers Japan and both Koreas. Now, Anna and I actually did not overlap. She left a couple weeks before I landed in Seoul in 2008. But we were in touch, and we've kept in touch since then. So she was in South Korea, and before me was really the foreign journalist based in South Korea who had traveled to North Korea more than anyone else. And so I kind of picked up the baton after she left and became the bureau chief who would travel most frequently to North Korea after she left. But she's now back to covering North and South Korea. So I think that with her, I'm curious to hear how North Korea looks today compared to when she was covering North Korea 10 years ago. So we'll hear a little bit about that, not only the changes that she's seen on the ground, but also differences in how they handle the media. Because in 10 years, a lot can change in terms of technology. We've got the internet. So some of those changes, as somebody who has made, I think, 2 trips to North Korea since she took this current post. Blaine Hardin, so Blaine is one of Anna's predecessors. He was the Washington bureau chief when I first arrived in South Korea. So he has a very interesting trajectory as well, because he was one of the first correspondents to really turn to defectors from North Korea for information. So I think that we'll have some really interesting conversations about developing defectors at sources. And also, as you may know, he wrote Escape from Camp 14, which featured a very prominent defector who last year admitted that he had fabricated parts of his story. So hopefully we'll be able to discuss that. And one of the questions that I get quite a bit from watchers of North Korea or readers of Escape from Camp 14 is, does this mean that we should be discounting what defectors say? So we want to have a little bit of conversation about that. And essentially what I'm doing is taking some of the conversations I've had with my fellow foreign correspondents and writers about the work that we do and the craft and the challenges of writing about North Korea, and taking that to the public and really giving our readers a little bit of the backstory behind the conversations we have, the challenges we face, and the kind of obstacles we face to writing about North Korea. I mean, North Korea has got to be one of the toughest countries to A, cover, B, write about. So whether you're a reporter or, like me, writing commentary, or you're a fiction writer, you just don't have many sources. So hopefully what they can share is how they develop those sources, the kinds of cautions that they build into their reporting, just so that the rest of you can become much more astute readers of information on North Korea.
Okay, great. Thank you again for your time and for organizing this great event here in DC.
Thanks.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. For those of you who are in DC and are listening to this episode right as soon as it airs, you can join Jean and the other great panelists at the Wilson Center on December 7th at 11 a.m. The event is hosted by the Wilson Center's Hyundai Motor Korea Foundation Center for Korean History and Public Policy, and sponsored by the Network for Korean American Leaders, the USC Center for Asian Pacific Leadership, and the Korea Foundation. Thanks again for joining me here on Korean Context, and we'll see you again next week.